trying to make the relationship between the Father and the Son more literal in your language, you might try saying there is between Jesus and God an asymmetrical social harmonious relation involving homogeneity.
I'm William O'Flaherty from EssentialCSLewis.com with another essay chat for the All About Jack at C.S. Lewis podcast. Today, Dr. Charlie Starr is joining me to discuss Horrid Red Things. Dr. Starr is the author of Light, C.S. Lewis's first and final short story. Welcome back to All About Jack, Charlie.
Thanks, William. I'm glad to be here.
If you're not familiar with the essay chat, it's part of an ongoing series examining a single essay by Lewis and discussing some of the points from it to encourage you to read or reread it. Therefore, it's important to note that neither of us hope to explore all the aspects of the essay. Well, before exploring Horrid Red Things with Charlie, I'm going to share background information about this shorter work. It was first published in the October 6, 1944 issue of Church of England newspaper. Around this time, in fact 7 months earlier, Lewis had finished his fourth and final broadcast on the BBC, and this material eventually became best known as Mere Christianity. But of course, Horrid Red Things is not from Mere Christianity. It is an essay best found in the book called God in the Dock, which is also available in audio. Speaking of audio, this essay in that format is rather short. It's just less than 10 minutes long. Before getting started by asking Charlie some questions to help understand Horrid Red Things, I want you, the listener, to picture in your mind Paris, France. Now, keep that picture in your mind, and in a few minutes, you'll see why I made that request. Finally, it's worth mentioning that this essay was written for the general audience because some of Lewis's shorter works are aimed at a specialized group, because he specialized in medieval and Renaissance literature, but this essay doesn't deal with that at all. Well, now, having said all that, Charlie, let's me begin by having you describe the issue Lewis addresses in Horrid Red Things.
Well, it's really interesting that you talk about this was an essay written for the man on the street, because that really is his central issue, at least to start with contextually in this essay, and that is the man on the street. Lewis talks about the sort of the tension between science and religion, and while the real theologian and the real scientist may look at things differently in Lewis's day regarding the relationship between the two, the man on the street, says Lewis, thinks of science as having sort of won out over religion. And when Christians then have to talk to the man on the street in Lewis's day, Lewis then essentially says that there is a problem for the typical thinker of his day, a problem with the idea of explaining away. And Lewis then raises this question, what is the difference between trying to explain Christianity or explain it away when science's answers to particular questions seem very clear, very historical, very literal? Can religion then really compete? Can Christianity really compete when it tries to say, okay, yes, we know this about science now, therefore we must explain the Bible or a particular story in the Bible in this way? And the average man then thinks, well, that's just you Christians trying to explain it away. And really sort of just lose ground then in what you say you believe.
Now, Lewis states there are two points he wants to make. The first has to do with the supernatural element in the Christian faith, which is some of what you're talking about. Tell us more about what Lewis suggests. Our listeners may be familiar that Thomas Jefferson had an approach. He had a Bible or an adaptation of the Bible that essentially excluded the miraculous. What does Lewis have to say in regards to this kind of approach?
In the end, whatever you explain about Christianity, there are certain things that cannot be explained away. If you try to apply some of the discoveries of science to Christianity, there comes a point where if Christianity is going to be Christianity, you cannot explain away, for example, the supernatural and the miraculous. Some things can simply not be lost. And in the end, there is a core of Christianity which is supernatural, that includes God coming down to be a man, his death on the cross, his resurrection, other things as well, the miracles of Christ. These things cannot, in the end, be explained away. So however we try to to bring science and Christianity together. At some point, the Christian who is going to continue to believe in Christianity, in what Lewis might have called mere Christianity, must say that regardless of what science says, these miraculous elements, these supernatural elements, they happened as it says they happened.
Now, the second point relates to what I asked everyone to do a little bit earlier, and that is to imagine Paris in their minds. Lewis notes that there is a difference between thinking and imagining. Charlie, tell us what it is and why it is important.
Lewis explains the difference between reason and imagination by offering an example which gives the essay its title. He says, "I once heard a lady tell her daughter that if you ate too many aspirin tablets, you would die. 'But why?' asked the child. 'If you squash them, you don't find any horrid red things inside them.' Obviously, when this child thought of poison, she not only had an attendant image of horrid red things, but she actually believed that poison was red. And this is an error. But how far does it invalidate her thinking about poison? She learned that an overdose of aspirin would kill you. Her belief was true." And so Lewis makes a very clear distinction that some of the images we have in our mind may be false, and yet we could potentially have true ideas about the subject matter. He will go on to say here or elsewhere then that there are interesting associations and disassociations between thinking and imagining. We may have false images and yet correct ideas. We may have false images that lead to incorrect ideas. For example, not necessarily a Lewisian example, but one that I like to use with my students, it seems to me that the devil would very much appreciate our modern belief, our modern vision of him as either a fella in red tights with a pitchfork and horns and a tail, or some green pea soup spitting possessed child in a horror film. These images are either laughable or horrible, so much so that they are unbelievable, and therefore people may refuse to believe in a devil like that. And that's exactly what he wants. The reason that can happen at all is because people are confusing their image of a thing with the idea of the thing. And that's very much what Lewis wants to fight against in this instance.
Now, in fact, related to specifically if people aren't connecting the dots regarding Paris, when you ask someone to think of Paris, they think of likely the Eiffel Tower. But that is not all of what Paris is about. And so it may represent, but it may not be the full picture.
Yeah, there is, in fact, that joke that in filmmaking that says that every window in Paris looks out on the Eiffel Tower. Because it's used so often in film as an establishing shot. So wherever you live in Paris, you can look out your window, and sure enough, you're going to be able to see the Eiffel Tower because it's iconic of the place. Clearly, though, it's not the entire place, but it becomes our image of the place. When we try to imagine Paris, we simply can't imagine the entire place. It's impossible for us to do that. So again, there is this difference between the image of the thing, the idea of the thing, and perhaps even the actual thing.
One of the other major points that Lewis makes is related to how language is used. Critics point out that Christianity uses non-literal and or even unscientific language when describing God. What is Lewis's reply to this so-called problem?
Lewis's reply is that you simply cannot talk about God or think about God without using unscientific, symbolic, metaphorical language. In another essay, he uses the example of a line that seems very simple and very literal in one sense. When we say that Jesus Christ is the Son of God, it sounds like we're making a literal statement, but it is in fact metaphorical. There is a relationship between Christ and the Father, which is like sonship, and yet Christ has always existed, coexisted with the Father eternally. And so his relationship, the relationship between Father and Son in the Trinity, is not quite like the relationship between Charlie and his son Brian. There was a time when my son did not exist, and then he came into existence. So it is like sonship, but it is not quite sonship. In trying to make the relationship between the Father and the Son more literal in your language, you might try saying something, according to Lewis, along the lines of, there is between Jesus and God an asymmetrical social harmonious relation involving homogeneity, But does that really help you get the meaning of that relationship? So whenever we talk about God, we have to use metaphorical language. And this isn't just true of supernatural things. It's also true of internal things. And Lewis points that out in Harvard Red Things, that if we say something as simple as, I see your point, we are not really talking about literally seeing an idea as if that idea is floating around like some word in a Sesame Street episode. We're using a metaphor to explain internal things. It's only when we're dealing with external sensory kinds of things that we can start to use language that is literal. This is very important then for Lewis, because in talking about God, we may have to use metaphorical language, but in talking about God incarnate, who came into the world and worked with people in experience that they encountered with their senses, the language then becomes literal. When they saw him hang on the cross, that event was a literal event. When they saw him ascend into heaven, that event was what their eyes beheld, and is in that sense a literal thing.
And as we noted earlier, this is not everything that you can glean out of the essay, but being rather short, it is most of the major points. We encourage you to read again Hard Red Things, which is an essay that is best found in God in the Dock, which has very many essays from Lewis. In fact, it's the largest collection that's available in print that's most easily attained. Now we want to, though, look at some favorite quotes. Charlie and I picked out a couple things here to share that stood out. For me, I especially liked some shorter pieces, and that is, in the first part, he notes the following: what will remain of the creed after all their explanations and reinterpretations will still be something quite ambiguously supernatural, miraculous, and shocking. And this underscores what we talked about earlier, that you can't take away the supernatural element, that in terms of explaining, you're not trying to explain away things, but that the Christian faith is not going to be the Christian faith unless you have the miraculous. You can't take it out and still have the Christian faith. And then part of another aspect that we were talking about, another short quote that I like from this essay, is we must distinguish the core of belief from the attending imagining. And that probably needs a little bit more context, but I'll leave you, the listener, up to reading it in Lewis. Charlie, what's a quote or two that you especially liked or enjoyed?
Well, the quote I read about the mother and the child, I think, is absolutely terrific. One quote that I have, though, near the end of the essay that I like very much deals with the idea of metaphorical language and talks specifically about the idea of the ascension. The man on the street in Lewis's day might say, well, it's silly to think that Christ would just simply fly up into some local heaven when, you know, the idea that heaven is in the sky is kind of crazy. It's a little bit ludicrous that he would come down from heaven. That idea of downward motion, well, that's just sort of silly. That he might then rise up and ascend to heaven. That's a little bit of a primitive notion, isn't it? To which Lewis replies, to say that God enters the natural order involves just as much spatial imagery as to say that he comes down. One has simply substituted horizontal or undefined for vertical movement. To say that he is reabsorbed into the noumenal is better than to say he ascended into heaven, only if the picture of something dissolving in warm fluid or being sucked into a throat is less misleading than the picture of a bird or a balloon going up. All language, except about objects of sense, is metaphorical through and through. To call God a force, that is, something like a wind or a dynamo, is as metaphorical as to call him a father or a king.
In fact, part of that quote I had as an additional short piece that stood out to me. All language except about objects of sense is metaphorical through and through. And then there was another final quote I'll share. Lewis says the following: there is thus a distinction not only between thought and imagination in general, but even between thought and those images which the thinker falsely believes to be true. Additionally, if you listen to this occasional series of essay chats, we try to make some connections with other either Lewis essays or maybe portions of a larger book that you can find related topics. I'll let Charlie tell us what he found.
One thing that's really nice about the Horrid Red Things essay is that it in fact gets expanded in Lewis's book, Miracles. There is an entire chapter entitled Horrid Red Things. And when you read the chapter after reading the essay, you realize that the chapter is an expansion of the essay written after the essay. Some other essays of Lewis's that deal with the issue of metaphorical language and our human failure to recognize how many of our metaphors are things that we take literally include essays like The Language of Religion, Is Theology Poetry, and one of my favorites, but one of his most obscure, Bluspels and Phalansferies. That's one to have some fun with.
We won't ask you to spell it. We'll have that a link or information about that in the show notes. But we're going to have Charlie share some closing thoughts here. But before we do that, I failed to mention earlier, Charlie has a website. It is simply Charlie W. Starr, and stars with two R's, .com. And there you can find information about his book, Light, as well as some other material that he has written and other information about him. Wrapping up then, let me pitch to Charlie any closing thoughts that about either what Lewis addresses or to summarize some of the things that we've been talking about, kind of some takeaway points.
Well, the thing that the essay doesn't deal with that I think we might apply today very quickly is this idea of false images taken as true ideas. He spends more time talking about how true ideas can still be had even if our images are false. But I think many people today may take false images as ideas about God, as about Christianity, as about what Christians believe. And so you may run into a person who says, I just cannot believe in the idea of a God who is some old man with a beard who sits up on a throne and is watching down to see what we're doing wrong and has a button on his chair to the trap door of hell, ready to push it at any moment. And I don't believe in that kind of God either. First of all, it's not an idea of a God at all. It's an image of God. And until people understand that there are a difference, that there is a difference between images and ideas, they will have all kinds of muddled thinking about the nature of Christianity, about the nature of God, about the nature of anything in life. So one, that's not even an idea about God. And two, it really is a bad image of God. But first of all, the doubter needs to recognize that is an image and not an idea. And once you can get the doubter to realize that, well, then you can start describing God and perhaps creating even images of God, which, acknowledging that they are metaphorical, are nevertheless closer to the real thing.
Very good application that I think is a good challenge to think about, or especially in maybe others that we might be able to help in better understanding the Christian faith. Again, we've been talking with Dr. Charlie Starr. The essay from Lewis in this essay chat has been Horrid Red Things. It's a rather short essay, again, available in God in the Dock. Be sure to visit EssentialCSLewis.com for links that we've talked about, for links to Charlie's website, as well as other interesting information about C.S. Lewis. Well, Charlie, thank you for joining me for this essay chat.
And thank you for having me.